Everyone, welcome our new sponsor, Diet Smoke.
Diet Smoke is the premier source for legal THC and mushroom products.
The team at Diet Smoke sent us gummies to enjoy while we whore and chill. My favorite are the grape sleep gummies.
And mine are the cherry lime gummies. With a wide range of strengths and doses, Diet Smoke promises to find the perfect product for you.
Whether you want something strong to unwind, a boost of energy to keep you going, or a lighter option for a mellow high, Diet Smoke has you covered.
They understand everyone is different, which is why they're dedicated to helping you find the perfect product. Their customer service team will be by your side helping you along the way.
Diet Smoke has cannabis gummies, shots, and vapes, each one made to deliver the best balance of flavor and effect.
So don't settle for less and join the Diet Smoke community and discover the buzz for you. Visit dietsmoke.com today and use code DFWTO for 50% off any item and enjoy your journey to cannabis bliss.
Diet Smoke, your partner in finding the perfect THC and mushroom products. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Hey guys, it's Casper
and Becky
from the DFWTO podcast. If you've been a longtime listener, you know how much mental health means to us.
Mental health actually plays a role in many horror films, especially the final girl subgenre. Whether it's Nancy facing her nightmares and defeating Freddy, or Sydney taking out Ghostface to overcome the trauma of and avenge her mother's death. Not only are horror movies a huge comfort to Casper and I, so is putting our mental health first. And if you agree and you're searching for professional services, let BetterHelp be your guide.
BetterHelp will connect you with a licensed therapist who can help you start your journey of self-awareness and discovery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and convenient for any type of schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get yourself matched up with a licensed therapist, and you can also switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Just like the final girls that triumph over evil, triumph over your trauma with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/DFWTO and save 10% off your first month when you sign up today. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DFWTO.
And remember, guys,
Don't
don't fuck
fuck
with
with
the
the
original.
original. Now let's get into the episode.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the DFWTO podcast. I am your host, Casper.
And I am your host, Becky Gremlin, and my voice is back.
She is no longer sick. And it is, wait, I forgot.
Did we mess up our intro?
We did.
Okay,
It's
I'm
fine.
sorry.
So we're here to bring you all things spooky on Wednesdays
Because
because
Wednesdays are for podcasts. Yeah, because I was very sick last week, guys, and I sounded absolutely awful. So that's why I just wanted everybody to know that I'm feeling much better. No more antibiotics, voice is back. And we're ready to get into the rest of these horror hound interviews.
so excited.
And we're very excited about this one tonight.
So we got to see this person short before we got to see another film, and it was actually incredibly well done. I loved the storyline. We were very excited
Same.
to talk to them to get them on the podcast, and they are with us tonight. And they did a short called No Slasher Here. And their name is Rob, and they have so graciously been able to come on to talk with us tonight. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Rob, could you pronounce your last name for us?
Yes, my last name is Teamstra. It's
Teamstra.
a Dutch name, yeah.
I love
It
it.
doesn't always roll off the tongue.
I just didn't want just wanted to make sure that I didn't that we didn't butcher it. So, thank you so much for granting this interview with us. We both really loved No Slasher Here and the theme behind it and just really overall everything. I think it was
It
one
actually
of my
just, I
like
literally
top
said,
five favorite shorts of the ones that I
oh
got
yeah.
to see for sure.
It made my little gay
Oh.
heart happy. I was
Yes.
so happy. I
Made my
literally
little
even
queer
said
heart.
that.
Made my little queer heart happy.
I was like, oh, it's gay. Oh.
I loved seeing your reaction at the end of the vlog. It's gratifying whenever people come up to me and get hit in the right way by the movie's twist and by the like, I guess the heart of the story that's a little bit obfuscated, but like we all had such such fun bringing it to life. It's always good that when that comes across.
It looked like fun.
Yeah, it did.
The chemistry of the characters like definitely showed even within the time constraints of most short films. Well, usually we like to start off by asking, it's kind of become a theme with the podcast because Scream was kind of the what's the word I'm looking
Influence,
for? Like the influence, the
inspiration.
inspiration for our name. So we like to start off, it's kind of like an icebreaker question. What is your favorite scary movie? And even if you can't narrow it down to one, we tell people maybe top three, or even like some people have a favorite series of films. So what would you say your favorite scary movie is?
Gun to my head, I'd probably say the original Alien.
Nice.
That's a film that it drove me further into my love of filmmaking and storytelling, but also kind of it drives at what I love so much about horror as a genre, which is the ability to create this world-class atmosphere and tension, and sort of there's something beautiful about the movie. Even the grotesqueness of it has this beauty to it that I just am completely entranced by. But as you can see from the film that I made, I'm also I adore slashers. The original Black Christmas is a favorite of mine as well. I guess I just love the 70s a lot. Carrie, a lot of films that really influence just what images come into my head when I'm trying to, create a picture.
That was the correct answer.
Yeah, exactly.
The
Perfect.
70s. Anything from the
Perfect.
70s
Anything
or
from
the
the
80s.
70s. Yeah.
It's just the correct answer.
Perfect.
Which isn't to say that Scream isn't also an influence, obviously. Like my film is, it's a phone call that has a meta quality. Like it's gonna draw a Scream comparison. And I looked at that opening scene with Drew Barrymore so many times before we made this film.
That's such an iconic opening scene, and
It is. Wow.
I was.
Well, it's because you're not expecting her to die. Like, she was the big name. Like, you're not expecting her
Yep.
to actually die.
That and I was fortunate enough to be so that movie came out around the same time that the Blair Witch Project did, and I was 15, and I got to see both films in the movie theater, and
Jealous.
both completely changed. As an already horror fan from my parents showing me the slashers from the 70s and the 80s, that just changed the game. Like, it just completely changed the game. And Scream for that reason, because that opening scene was absolutely insane. I mean, I knew Drew Barrymore. Anybody at that time, knew who she was. This is like a big name. And that was, I mean, for me anyway, that was the first time I'd ever seen anything where it's like, you killed off a big name in the beginning of the film, and the way she was, I mean, gutted, like, oh, you only got to
Well,
see a little bit of it, but
he did say it would gut her like a
yeah,
fish.
you
Yeah,
did.
it's
He
I feel
did.
like a movie these days wouldn't be able to get away with that sort of thing, because social media is so hyper focused on picking trailers apart and making sure you've analyzed every little scrap of a movie. I guess I can think of one more recent example, but saying it out loud would spoil exactly what picture it is. Anyway,
Yeah, we don't want to do that. They're like, I
I
want to
also realize
say
I'm in a
it,
funny
but
place where I've made a 9-minute short film that I don't want to spoil, but is you how much you can talk around the plot of a extremely, extremely short movie is, it's a fun challenge.
I also love the fact that it's just, it always amazes me in short films when I watch a short film and it is just such a perfect, the timing is perfect, the story is so concise but so well done. And I remember saying after seeing it, I was like, I want to see a feature. I was like, I want a whole movie of this. Like
I hope more people have that reaction, frankly.
I always think that's too, that is a good, because I've had that. I mean, even before the experiences we've had with Horror Hound this year and last year with being able to be a part of the film festival and getting to see these films and the shorts, watching short films prior, like just random ones on YouTube or ones
Yeah.
that you hear about, and you're like, even if, and some of them were made into features, some of them weren't, but like you watch them, and I think that's kind of the ultimate thing is like, oh, I want to see more of this. Like, I want, like, I'm drawn in to see more of this. And like I said, I think that was for me, because I agree with Casper. I want to see more, and I think a lot of it was for me the it was the chemistry with the characters, really. So like, how did the process come, I guess just general, how did the process come together with I guess it's kind of a two-part question, with not only the concept of the film, but also bringing the cast together to make it happen.
This film came together surprisingly fast. I think like, oh yeah, no, actually, this is a fun timing wise because in 2 weeks it'll have been exactly a year since we shot the movie. But basically, early 2023, early last year, I was texting my friend Linnell, who co-produced the movie and who wound up starring in it. And I asked her if she wanted to make a spooky movie this year because the two of us, we had worked together, but we never worked on a horror film together. I never directed her. Oh, I had directed her in a comedy, but not in a horror thing. I knew we both loved horror. And so when she said yes, I had this challenge in my head, which was, what sort of horror movie would I craft around Linnell? And the thing that popped in my head was this sort of like, she has this very like Final Girl sort of face and attitude, which I think I really wanted to use. So then it just sort of became like a me taking long walks through the neighborhood. I was unemployed at the time. I walked to my local bookstore and just brainstorm about like what sort of stories I could fit Linnell into. And then one day while I was on a walk, this idea popped into my head of the opening of When a Stranger Calls, the scene where have you checked on the children? That sort of scene where a woman is alone in a big house with big windows, and gets this call from a creepy guy. That scene popped into my head, but along with it, a little wrinkle on that, which was, what if she picked up the phone and the person who answered was, say, Drew Barrymore in Scream, saying, "Stop calling me." And so it became, so that's sort of where the jumping off point was me thinking like, oh, that's a fun little Mobius strip of a premise, because that it prompts so many questions. It feels sort of impossible and circuitous. So then, like, the film became me thinking through this particular dynamic between this one woman on the phone and this one woman in the house, and then solving that little mystery while also giving us little tense what's going on slasher. It sort of became a combination of two of my favorite comfort food subgenres, which are the slasher movie and the mystery. Though I guess in this case they are like, that's sort of already like, it's the Kevin Williamson mold of slasher mysteries, which he pioneered with like Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer and all that. But it's such a fun space to play in, and this was, while making it, this is where I held myself to the fire a bit more than usual, because usually I'm a lot more loose in letting the movie tell me what it wants to be, and I can get very indulgent with atmosphere and with letting shots breathe. And with this one, I realized we had to be very tight, very focused. I edited it, and I wound up like, if a shot was like, there were some shots I was really proud of that were long, long master shots that went on for 5, 10 minutes. But the movie's 9 minutes long, so I obviously wouldn't use all that, and it wasn't. The camera wasn't the star, the actors were the star. So I cut very closely, didn't let myself be indulgent at all, and it became like a fun exercise in that regard, but also just bringing a lot of people together who I wanted to work with. And that brings me to the casting thing, because the casting was Linnell, Ethan, and Noel. The three of them are all good friends of mine. Linnell, as I mentioned, I worked with before. Noel was someone who I've known for a while. I never directed her, though she had kind of directed me. And I'll tell that story in a second, because it's horror related and very fun. And the third person was Ethan, who plays Linnell's boyfriend in the film. And Ethan, I met when I was in 7th grade. The two of us did Shakespeare together as kids. And we both wound up moving to LA, and I wound up eventually getting coffee with him and casting him in a few movies. He was in a more abstract queer horror movie that I did back in 2020 called Queerent. And yeah, he's just a great presence on screen, and he wound up being a last minute replacement for an actor I'd originally reached out to, but I'm very glad he wound up being available because he's so perfect in that role.
And he was.
Cool. I was speaking for a long time there, wasn't I?
No, that was awesome.
I was sucked into everything you were saying.
And I did have a two-part question, so you answered it perfectly.
And I was going to tell you.
Let me follow up with the Noel story because.
I have to hear the story for sure.
I don't, have either of you all been to Universal Studios during like Halloween?
Unfortunately, no.
It's they do every year. They do Halloween Horror Nights both in Orlando and in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And one season, I was working as a freelancer in Hollywood, and as you may have heard, that's a difficult life. I wound up auditioning for a scare actor for Halloween Horror Nights, and Noelle had done it before. She's a scare actor. She's acted all over the place, and she wound up coaching me through my audition, and I got it. I wound up playing one of the like 17 different Michael Myerses that was in the Michael Myers house.
Love it.
In 2018. It's one of the more esoteric gigs I've ever done. But in that same. That same year, Noelle was playing a werewolf inspired by the movie Trick or Treat. So
yes.
It's just fun. That's like the one capacity in which we've creatively worked together before this movie, before I reached out and cast her. And she was a trooper. She was, you know, working a day job and then would just come out for these night shoots. Our movie was two back-to-back overnights, so like dusk till dawn. And one evening of like just quick pickups where the DP and I just ran around the house grabbing insert shots with just me as the stand-in. So it was a whirlwind, and Noelle was a trooper because she was driving up from Anaheim, which is like a 2-hour drive after a long day of work, and then staying up all night. So I'm always like that sort of it's just sort of a thing when you're directing people, you want to encourage them to like. Or you want to like foster this feeling of trust between yourself and between your performers and your crew, and when someone is willing to do that sort of thing to be in a movie you're directing, that's like, that's no small responsibility.
Oh well, no, not
that's
at all.
Actually, like amazing though that she that you got, first of all, it's amazing you got to work in Hollywood Horror Nights. Two friends of mine got married, and that was their honeymoon. They went to Halloween Horror Nights because they're big, 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 big horror fans. And that was like their honeymoon that they did, and I'm jealous. And it's very cool that you got to be in that, but it's also really cool that you got to work with somebody that you got to work with in that as well. And I also wanted to talk.
I mean, it was also like scare actors really know how to move, and for that particular role, I knew she was going to be on the phone for so much of the movie, but then later. When like we have like a character showing up in the background, and I wanted to have someone on set who can move in a creepy way and who understands the physicality of being scary and you know that sort of thing. Like you develop a shorthand, and you when you're casting, I've done more intensive casting processes as in like casting people who aren't my friends. But when you know so many actors, sometimes your brain winds up just automatically tailoring them to certain roles, except tailoring certain roles to them because you're like, I know what she can do, I know what he can do, I know what they can do. And that's just part of the joy of this art form.
I was going to tell you too, I absolutely love the fact that I thought I had it figured out until the actual reveal. Every time something would happen, I was like, I got it figured out. And then something else would happen and I'm like, nope. And it kept me guessing the whole time until I was like, oh, really?
I'm always terrible at those, so I just refuse to do that anymore. I want to walk, because, and I'm somebody who I love twists. And
same.
I think that comes from, my dad really got me into reading. I've always loved to read. As well as watching movies. And my dad really got me into, even though my mom was more of the like horror movie person that really pushed it when I was a kid, my dad really got me into reading mystery novels. And a lot of the majority of them always had these twists at the end. So
Yeah.
that really got me more into watching movies like that. So movies where that is probably one of my most favorite things ever, is to walk in knowing absolutely nothing, and then that ending, it's like a sucker punch, but like in the best way. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, because it takes the wind out of your sails. It
It
just it
does.
completely like
In the best way,
in the
too.
and just in the absolute best way. So that, I
Because I
mean,
didn't see that coming
I
at
did not see the end
all.
of your film coming
I
at
was
all,
like,
and I
it's
loved and I
this.
absolutely loved it.
That part of the actual reveal, I was literally on the edge of I was on the edge of my seat, and then it just this giant grin just went across my face, and I was like, "Fuck
Well, I
yes."
had a grin. Can I just say that I had a grin on my face, because I also love films where this movie was so well shot.
It was. The production value was amazing.
And every time something was going
Cinematography.
on, because that's another thing I love. I love when stuff is going on in the background.
Same.
And every time she was on the phone and would like walk past, and there's like another thing happening, and then she walked past again, and another thing's happening. And I'm like, this is probably not supposed to be funny, but it is funny. At least I found it humorous. Like, I thought it was
No,
funny.
yeah, same. I mean, the tone is a bit of a weird one. There are some lines that I laugh so much at in Behind the Monitor that that never get a laugh because of their context in the movie. But I'm so glad you talk about the shooting. Dennis would be very happy about that. Dennis is my cinematographer. He and I have worked on several pictures together, and when we first talked about doing this movie, I told him, "Look, I know Linnell's house. We filmed it at her house. It's got these big windows. It's got a lot of space. I want to move. I really want us to like. I don't want us to be. There's a. I don't want us to be locked down and just like have her plopped in one chair on the phone. I wanted to give it a real sense of momentum, because I adore blocking. My partner makes fun of me for it because it's one of my favorite parts of filmmaking, the placement of actors and moving them around and doing rehearsal. So you're like in the perfect placements for where the camera is, and it's very theatrical, but it also like it can be done in a way that's so fun and exciting. And so like we had these big windows that we could use, we had this so many parts of the house we could use, and I told Dennis, I told him, get your lights out of my way, and he was a little chagrined because if you know because like digital cinematography, obviously, or any cinematography, the more light you pump into a space, the more clean your image can get, because you can use a camera that like has a lower has lower ISO. I don't want to get too technical or anything, but like for this film, we shot at an extremely high ISO, which means that like it was a very grainy image, relatively speaking. But I trusted our colorist. I trusted Dennis to be able to light strategically, so the image would still look pretty clean and pretty good, and also like be able to work in some of that like sort of roughness, because we're making a movie for not a whole lot of money, so it's not going to look like a Hollywood movie to a certain degree. And our visual references are stuff that's rougher, are the like giallo slashers from Italy from the 1970s, or like the original Scream, which is like a movie that isn't quite as like, even if you compare Scream 1 to Scream 6, like the lighting philosophy is so different. And we're echoing more of Scream 1 in terms of like how we lit the space, how warm it is compared to like the later films, though it isn't a particularly visually warm picture, but it's got these beige walls that I always remember from the Drew Barrymore scene. Anyway, I'm rambling again, but like we had such fun with the look of the picture. Production design wise, we had a fun moment early on where the phone that like kicks off the action where she receives the creepy phone call, it's placed in this nook. And when I noticed this nook in Linnell's house, I had this moment of, "Hey, Linnell, can we place the phone there?" And she said, "Yeah, sure, it's fine. It's kind of blank though, isn't it?" I said, "Yes, it is." And she said, "Do you mind if we paint that?" And I said, "I wasn't going to suggest this because this is, the house you were renting, but if you're done with painting it, hell yeah, let's paint it. Let's get a good strip of red through the wall." And it was just great. And I loved how it wound up looking. But usually, like in indie film, you get very like tense about like doing anything that could permanently alter a space, but when you have lax landlords and a homeowner who's like, I guess not owner, but like a renter who's like willing to do that work. You know, it's great. And she, Linnell, and her partner Cody, who also was like helped us co-produce the movie. The two of them, they like repainted that wall. They like did a lot of organizing around the house in the week leading up to the filming, so that when we came in, we could just dress and go, which is, you know, pretty key because obviously the resource that's the most expensive on movies is time, is everyone's time.
Yeah, for sure. And the nerd, listen, the nerd talk I love
Yep.
because I am someone that will
Same.
watch hours of behind the scenes
Same.
documentaries of films. I made my
Oh,
husband sit
wonderful.
through I think it was like 3 or 4 hours of this document. It was about they called it RoboDoc too, which was absolutely perfect. It was about RoboCop, and
Oh, amazing. They
it
called
was
it
so
RoboDoc.
oh, it was amazing, and it was so good. And I like one thing that I thought was interesting that you mentioned too, as far as like movement, I did not know that Peter Weller, who is Murphy, who plays RoboCop, if nobody has ever seen RoboCop, I don't know what you're
Do you
doing with,
live
I don't know
under a
what you're
rock?
doing with your life, but he had a dance background, and how the way they made him do like so much movements in his audition that ultimately played a role in how he moved as RoboCop in the suit itself. That just like totally fascinated me. And the cinematography in that movie is insane, especially the opening scene where they're actually like going through the cop station and you're like seeing all the hustle and bustle, and like you're like one of the cops and you're like walking with them, and there's all this conversation going on and all this stuff. I just love RoboCop so much. I just did not realize after watching
RoboCop's
the documentary how much I like loved that movie, and God, how deep it meant to be. I remember being very young and watching that, and the scene where he got his hand blown off, like as Murphy, and like, you know, they're shooting him up and everything. I cried. I got like that movie made me very emotional as a kid. I think I just got the deeper meaning and didn't realize until years later. And I'm like watching the documentary, and the guy that directed it was a German director and was very religious. And
Verhoeven, yeah.
yeah, had done like this guy has done very extensive research about Jesus as like a real
Oh yeah, he wrote
per.
like a whole book on Jesus, didn't
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and Bloody Disgusting produced that documentary, which was very interesting. So I was just like, what? Was RoboCop a horror? What? Like, it had me
I
had the
mean,
wheels turning.
I guess RoboCop's as much of a horror as
It's
Jaws
very
is.
dystopian, and
Because
it's sci-fi,
it's like sci-fi,
and
yeah.
yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that. The last film I did was before No Slasher Here was a sort of dystopian picture. It was more directly Twilight Zone influenced
Love it. Love
than
that.
like RoboCop. But one of the things I do love about genres, about working genre film, is that you can really have fun just blending things and like seeing what comes out the other end. You're
Yes.
like, especially like, I don't know, it's a film that like the writer and I disagreed on whether it counts as a horror movie or not. My previous film, which was written by a friend of mine. And it didn't matter because we got into some horror film festivals, and I'm like, well, who am I to say? You know? I directed the movie, but like, you know, if it plays before an audience that'll like it, doesn't matter to me.
I
And
think
see,
just,
I love
yeah.
that because, like, I was gonna say about cinematography, I get into these moods where it's certain types of movies I want. I'm
Right.
like, I want to feel like I'm in this godforsaken forest, which usually I will watch The Witch or Blair Witch. I'm like, I
Or the
want,
ritual.
or The Ritual, exactly. I'm like, or I want this cold winter. Don't get me started on how much I fucking love isolated winter horror films.
Oh,
Jesus.
I've got a film for you if it comes around to Horror Hound or some other film festival. I haven't seen it yet, so full disclaimer there, but my friends Sean Temple and Sarah Wisner, they're a pair of incredible horror filmmakers from Vermont. They made this film called The Thaw, which is currently doing its film festival run. I've heard nothing but incredible things, and I can't wait to see it. I'm seeing it at Salem Horror Festival in a couple of weeks. But like, yeah, they're a pair of filmmakers I aspire to. They make a lot of these really punchy 10-minute horror movies, and yeah, their latest is very much up that alley. It's a 19th century Massachusetts, or yes, 18th century Massachusetts sort of horror movie, and you know, it's
You
got
had me at
snow, it's got
18.
black and white photography. It's about like about intentionally trying to hibernate through the winter and failing, you know, like, you know, good shit.
You had me at 18th, 19th century. In Massachusetts was just the cherry on top.
Yeah, you said they were from Vermont. Like, all of it was just like, oh, yes, give it to yes, me. All the things.
I love that you can do that, though. So, really quick, I wanted to ask you. So, this isn't your first film. How long have you been doing movies and things like that? How long have you been in the industry?
Oh, boy, that's a long and depressing answer. No, just kidding. I guess, so I graduated from film school in 2016, and I've been basically freelancing. I was freelancing around Hollywood for a number of years after, maybe like 3 years after, before I landed a full-time writing job. That was not writing for screen, but it was writing for audio, it was writing podcasts, and that sustained me long enough to keep this movie-making habit going. So for, I guess, from 2016 to present, I've just been like every 8 months or so scraping together the funds and the friends to make a short film. So, you know, with a little pause for the pandemic, obviously. Though I did make a movie November of 2020. It was after the industry had figured out pandemic restrictions. That was when we shot Queerent, which is a film I'm immensely proud of that took a bit of a minute to find its audience because it was an esoteric horror. It was an esoteric horror movie about like about confronting gender dysphoria, and it was very abstract and poetic and relied on a lot of imagery and inference, and it was a bit Lynchian and probably a bit too abstract for like a lot of folks that were already on that wavelength. So it was an interesting experience seeing like having that movie play at film at like only a couple film festivals, and then coming right out of it into my dystopian film, which made a much bigger splash, and then into this film, which has been a whirlwind in the year since we made it. But like, to answer your question, I guess this, like, of the shorts that I've, you know, made, there are probably like four that are like my current babies that I'm like the most proud of. The rest I consider like the rest I consider training, you know, because it's all just like the 10,000 hours thing. It's all just, you know, making art to make your next art better. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily cheapen the art you're making in the moment. Like, there are things I did in film school that I'd never show in public, but I still am very pleased with what I did for like what I knew at the time. So it's all, you know, just growth and continuity.
Oh, for sure.
And the fun thing about shorts is that, you know, none of it really matters until you make a feature.
Right. And I'm starting to like shorts a lot too, though, to be honest, because especially when you put them in, like,
don't get me wrong. Yes. I grew up listening to my dad reading me Edgar Allan Poe short stories.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And those had a tremendous impact on my like creative imagination.
Me too.
So I do think the short form storytelling has like tremendous value. It just, the industry, the film industry does not support shorts in the way that it, you know, really could, and or the way that it should. And it's a little frustrating because it's, you know, just basically auditioning for the chance to direct a feature for however long.
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, I've heard things that like Jordan Peele and other directors are starting like programs and things to have more shorts be featured. And hopefully that with film festivals and different things like that, that that will start to turn around because there's clearly an audience for them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just, and like, if there's an audience for...
like Alter, like they've got a a terrific program, Short of the Week. Like there's a lot of like online people that, or online platforms that do a wonderful job distributing, but it is also like, yeah, it's always a challenge just because of the volume and how accessible filmmaking is, which is, it's a net benefit how easy it is to make a movie now versus in even the early 2000s or before.
Yes.
But then like, once you realize the more accessible it gets, the more competition you're dealing with, for better and for worse. So, like, you know what? It's a rising tide lifts all ships, but also there's a whole lot of ships.
True.
Well,
it's
like, true. I feel like if there's an audience for anthology films, there's an audience for short films. It's literally the same
Absolutely.
Thing.
It is. Yeah, and there is.
That's
there
why
is
I
an
love
audience.
Bloody Bites. Like, we have a friend. I met Tony Wash at Horror Hound forever ago, and he made Skeletons in the Closet. And now he's working on Bloody Bites. And I'm like, I love the fact that you're in this niche of anthology and short films, because I'm like, I love anthologies. So I'm like, if you have an audience for anthologies, you have an audience for short films.
It's what brought my husband isn't a huge horror fan. He tends to like more of the like creature feature and monster movies, which I always love too. They're a comfort. But anthology films are what really what brought him over. He loves watching shorts because and I think it's something that appeals to our time. I think that newer generations are starting to, and I don't know if this is unfortunate or fortunate, kind of starting to get shorter attention spans. So I think that anthologies, I think we're going to start to see a wave of that because I think it's something, and it can be something that can be consumed all in one. Like it's kind of the perfect binging because you could sit there and watch a 2-hour anthology just full of short films and just be completely engrossed, and all of them could have. I loved the A through Z, the alphabet, the
The
ABCs of
ABCs of
death.
death.
I was like, I'm gonna butcher that.
Oh,
Because I mean, I absolutely
I love
loved
those.
those so much because you got so many genres all shoved into one, which is why I really push horror so much, and I feel like it's getting less of a negative than what it does because I feel like horror as a genre is one of the most perfect in film because horror is one of the few genres that has so many subgenres that things that you wouldn't necessarily consider, just like we were talking about RoboCop, things that you wouldn't maybe necessarily consider a horror. If you kind of take a step back and look at various subgenres, you can go, wow, that technically is a horror film. It
Yeah,
just
exactly.
belongs into subgenre category A or whatever.
Yeah, and like
And it
also
works.
I mean, one of the things that has better than any other genre too is the like eagerness of its audience too. Like, I mean,
Yes.
there's a lot of talk about how movies are, especially mainstream Hollywood, is so consumed with this idea of IP and like what is like a guaranteed return on investment? Is it superhero movies? Is it, is it like these stars? And horror, in a sense, has an audience that's the most eager for just new stuff, for stuff that's like that is out there and strange and tests boundaries, whether creative boundaries or like taste boundaries, like, I don't know, Terrifier or something, but like
A.
the
Yep.
fact that like there is this sort of like hunger in horror fans to just like to just and not consume, I think that's a bit of a pejorative, but like there's an eagerness to appreciate the new and the weird and the strange that I as a creator always appreciated and as an audience member also appreciated. When I moved out to LA, one of my formative memories was going to this film festival called Horrible Imaginings, which I don't think exists anymore, but going there, I was like just in awe of like all these people who are like, just here for a good time, here for like whatever the filmmakers have to bring them. And I think there's something beautiful about that. It's why, like, I don't know. It's why anthology films are like so delicious, because it feels like someone isn't going to waste my time, but this will be like nothing else I've seen before because it'll be a bunch of different creative voices thrown into a mixtape.
Yes.
And yeah, there's something beautiful and wonderful and welcoming about that.
That's why I feel like indie horror, this is the time for indie horror, and why I love that so many film festivals, really just horror festivals or festivals, period, are really trying to amp the film festival up because they're like, you want new, we're giving you all of this new. Here's like all of these things. And it's like, over the past couple years that, Becky was talking about, the talent that we have seen, the movies that we have seen, and it's astounding. Like
And
last
you're
year
not
and
you're
this year, it's just like, this is the same concept I've seen before, but it's done different. This is a new concept that I've seen before, and it's done so well. Cinematography, like you forget you're watching an indie film, to be honest, because the production value is so there.
And Shudder, I just and
And God bless
we
Shudder.
they're not paying us in any way, but I just want to give a
They
personal
should.
shout out. They should pay us. I just want to give a personal shout out to Shudder and IFC because they are really they're changing the game. It's something that it's like it's Hollywood, but it's not Hollywood, and it's giving a push to the new in a way I don't want to say mainstream. There's a better word for it. It's pushing indie. It's giving a big oomph to indie more into the mainstream.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
I heard this like a few years back. They announced, I think when Shudder was like, I forgot their exact business history, but there was a minute where Shudder was getting downsized a bit by AMC, and I was terrified that it was going to no longer exist.
yes.
But because like that's, you look for when you're an indie film, you look, or indie filmmaker, you look where like your work could eventually go, and you see places like Shudder, and you're like, a future, you know, light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
But fortunately, they seem to still be chugging along, which is good.
And they're doing
It's gratifying to see.
Late Night with the Devil.
I cannot
I'm
fucking wait to
so
watch that.
happy. My husband and I got to see that in the theaters, and it absolutely blew me out of the water.
Nice, nice. I haven't seen it yet.
I was so pleased with it. And it just I was really I just was so happy because I thought if this is the this is so big, and a lot of the trailers were Shudder and IFC film, and I've been a fan of IFC for a long time, Independent Film Channel. I used to, I mean, when it was a cable channel, I would watch it religiously because it would show movies that like you couldn't see anywhere and lesser
Before
known
everything was
and weirder
accessible.
stuff. I also wanted to say, Rob, because I know we only have a little bit more time left with you, that I would love, the more you've talked about Queerant and I looked it up on IMDb, I would love to see it. I hope I get to, because I'm one
Yes.
of those people that pot, like, I saw, my husband told me about Pi, and I remember the first time I saw that, I could see how other people would like, this is just too much for me. And I absolutely loved it. I loved Eraserhead. I am the strange and unusual. I love anything. I love I'm one that really loves something abstract, I think because of the way that I watch films
We
and the
don't
way
watch
that I
films, we digest
interpret,
them.
like interpret, and I kind of pick apart everything
Yep.
with films that I think that Queerant just sounds like something right up my alley, personally. And I think just with our, you know, I don't want to. I mean, I guess our podcast is gay, basically.
I mean, I am incredibly gay, and you only have eyes for one
I am
man.
incredibly queer.
I am so gay.
And it just, and I think that's important. I mean, that's something that we have constantly tried to push, especially with in that, because I feel like that's something else that's needed now more than ever, that's done from people
Part
that
of the
are a part of
community.
it, and it's them speaking their voices. It's them giving a without it having, I guess, what is the best way?
The stereotypes around it.
Yeah, that it's not stereotypical, and you can tell.
Just like
Like
your film,
it's like
Rob, honestly, like
there have
you're
been queer characters, and there's these characters that exist, but then you can tell if it's written by someone that is or isn't, if that makes
Right.
sense.
Well, it's just
Like
like
the
you're
absolutely there, and like queer voices have like found homes in horror since like for you know ages now, since you know the beginning, since Mary Shelley. But like
Yes.
the like I but like yeah, it's the like the kinship felt with the other that is like so inherent to both like to any non-normative experience, but like the queer experience is like one that really relates to. I'm particularly inspired by the work of Clive Barker personally. He's
Thank
someone
you.
who I absolutely look up to as like both as a writer and as a
Praise
just a
be
filmmaker.
to that man.
But the yeah, and just like it's wonderful seeing now that like you know indie film has is much more accessible now that like it's more possible to lift up marginalized voices in a mainstream media like film. It is like so gratifying to see people take control of their own narratives. So like we're no longer the monsters entirely. We're also like we're now also the heroes of horror stories. We're now still also the monsters. Sometimes the monsters are the heroes of horror stories. It's like it's this relationship between what is seen by, you know, mainstream society as the grotesque, and what is like, what is seen with a sense of like, of beauty and reverence from like people who relate to, you know, I think about that. I don't know if I think he's a straight man, but I think about that story Guillermo del Toro told about like relating to the creature from the Black Lagoon, and like that sort of story like propels a lot of us forward to make art of our own. The without like I guess jinxing it too badly, the next short I'm currently working on with my friend Lily is sort of an inversion of Rosemary's Baby that's like got a very trans subtext that I'm very excited to like to work on with her. She's writing it, I'm directing it, and we're like, yeah, we're gonna have a lot of fun with this particular subject matter, because both of us have always, you know, have a long history of like putting our own queer experiences into our work, and like, yeah, I just get excited by working with people who's like, who I think have like a really interesting and unique perspective, and that's sort of what the fun of pulling together a movie crew, the fun of pulling together collaborators, and like uplifting other creators in the horror space. It's wonderful.
And it shows, so, it shows through. It does to other people that are craving that. It does show.
So what you're telling me is I need to follow your films, because I'm going to do that.
Because you said trans, you and said Rosemary trans, Baby, and like, Rosemary's what? Baby, and I was just like, here. Yes and yes and yes.
I am here for this, and I would love to see your other films, because I love this one so much. And just like we were talking, just to have somebody in the community, and you know, just I it has been a long time since I've smiled like that at a twist of a film. So like,
same here.
I'm so glad.
Same here. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank
Rob.
You.
We really appreciate it. No Slasher
yeah,
Here was the short, and we can't wait to watch your other stuff. And is it showing at any other festivals? Like, are you just kind of working on next projects at this point?
It's still showing at more film festivals.
Awesome.
It's playing, I think, two in no, it's one in April, one in May. It's playing at New York City Fest on April 25th, I'm going to fly out to New York for that. And then it's playing at Crimson Screen Horror Film Festival in South Carolina on, I want to say, the Saturday the 11th of May, I believe. It's that Saturday. I could have gotten the number wrong. There are probably more coming down the pike, but I don't know if I have them. Actually, hang on. It's also playing at the International Horror Hotel Film Festival in Cleveland, Ohio. That's sometime in June. I haven't gotten the dates for that yet. And then there's just a lot pending. these things pile up. But like, if you can see it, then you know. If any of your listeners are in those areas, I recommend looking those up and saying hi if you're there.
Especially the one in Cleveland, because we are in Ohio. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for sure.
So if there's anything you want to promote yourself, your socials, your movies,
yeah, feel free to do all that.
You
now.
Have the floor.
Sure. Well, I can be found on Instagram under The Time Star, as well as Pun and Hide. That's my, I just post writing thoughts and movie updates there. And I can also be found at The Time Star on Blue Sky and Twitter, a platform I will not called by its new name.
We don't either.
We don't either. Yay!
No, yay!
It's like a classic cop sign. Like, you know, that's a narc when they say it.
Boo!
I guess those are my main social platforms. That's where I'll be announcing various updates. Whenever I have a digital release date for No Slasher Here, I will post there. It'll either, you know, be on a platform, or I'll just post it myself, depending. Or it'll be in one of those film festivals that does like a timed thing, whatever. It'll probably show up online at some point, and I hope people can see it, and, you know, and hope it resonates the way it did with y'all.
Awesome.
Well, once it does come out, just let us know, and we'll promote it too. Like, we'll let everybody know that it's able to be viewed wherever you have it up.
Wonderful, yeah, no, that'd be perfect. And I'm so glad that I met y'all at Horrorhound, and hopefully it won't be the only time.
Same here,
same.
For
You're
sure.
Such a sweetheart. Thank you so much for everything, and thank you for making a film that the gays could appreciate.
Yes.
That's my only career ambition.
Yay! We love Yay, it.
We love it. You're our favorite director now. Thank you. No, but seriously, thank you so much for coming on. And you're, like we tell everybody, like genuinely, you're a friend of the podcast. Anytime you need to promote anything or want to say, hey, need to, you know, come on and say, hey, I'm releasing this or whatever, we got you.
We'd love to have you back on.
Yep, for sure.
All right, will do. Thank you all so much. This was a blast.
Thanks,
Rob. All right, thanks. Have a good rest of your night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, guys. Well, that was the awesome Rob with their film No Slasher Here. Hopefully you guys will get to see it soon. Make sure to check it out at any of the festivals that they're going to. And
especially the one in Cleveland if you're in the Ohio area. So
yes,
please.
And then make sure if and we will also, like I was saying to them, if it releases somewhere, we will let you guys know like where you can find it. It's definitely worth a watch. Just kind of like we were talking about the production value, the whole thing. I thought it was great. It really kept me guessing until the ending reveal. So
it is worth a watch if you 100%. Get to see it. So next week, guys, we are going to be interviewing Mr. Michael Squid. He directed the film Janelle's Baby, which was another film that was featured at the Horror Hound Film Festival. And it actually won Best Editing at the film festival as well. So we cannot wait to have Michael on. He was a really cool guy, and I just kept randomly running into him the entire weekend, but it was awesome. But it was awesome. He was just the coolest guy, and he was just really dope and really cool and laid back to talk to. And his film has just, it's been all over. If you follow him on social media, it's been making the film festival rounds. And it is definitely worth a watch. So if you got to see it at Horror Hound, if you got to see it this past weekend, we got a couple weekends back. We're doing these out of order, guys. And I've been sick and there's just been so much going on that we're got to interview Eduardo Sanchez.
That's still surreal to me.
Yeah, still 15-year-old me is just screaming still.
18-year-old me. 16-year-old me. How old was I?
Still
Maybe
screaming.
I was 15 as well.
Maybe you were. You were 15 too. we were all 15. So
when you're 15. Sorry. So yeah, next week, make sure to stick around for that. Can't wait to have I love doing these interviews now. I love that. This is like something we get to look forward to after Horror Hound. It's so great. I love all these people. They're so wonderful.
Yeah. And we've just, it's the connections, mm-hmm. really. Yeah. So.
And it's so funny because they're always like, wow, these people are so great. And we're always like, wow, these people are so great. And it's just wild, like how you're not working. You're just creating friendships and just appreciating films that they do. And I love that so much. All right, guys. Well, of course, you know, we have all of our socials at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Twitter.
DFWTO podcast. Handle is DFWTO8811. If you have any questions, concerns, want to say, hey, give us any ideas for the podcast, you can email us at DFWTO8493@gmail.com. And lastly, please give us a follow and a subscribe on Amazon Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, and Podbean. Make sure you write us or make sure you like or subscribe so you always know when we put new episodes out. Give us a review. We love to hear from you. We love constructive criticism, the whole nine yards. And also buy our merch. Every time I post a link to the podcast, if you just click on it, you can see the merch and you can buy one of our cool things. Still obsessed with the Wednesdays Are For Podcast shirt. I genuinely have worn it so many times. It's wearing out. So I'm going to have to buy another one. But that's fine. So... All right, is that everything?
I think we got it.
All right, guys. Well, of course, we love you. Thank you so much for all of your support. Can't wait to come back next week. And remember,
don't fuck with the original.
Okay, bye.